This is Will Primos. You're listening to Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druick.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Hard to believe that we are creeping up on October. Got a great show planned for you. Got a great guest tonight. Going to be talking about waterfowling and having some fun. But before we get started, we are going out to talk to Leo Kuiper Jr. And he's going to be doing a live remote tomorrow over at Kits and File and The Real Shot. With the proceeds going to the Appleton East Ice Fishing Club and the Corey Fisher Outdoor Club. So Leo and Balky have kind of lent their talents to come out and help us promote this a little bit, raise some money, have some fun. And we're going to go ahead and welcome in John Leopold. John, how you doing?
Good, Mark. Alex, how are you boys doing this fine evening?
What's going on? What are you doing right now?
I just pulled into Kuiper Manor, and I was going to start making some dinner, and I had a quick appointment after I left the firm.
That's a gated community, right, Leo? Gated?
It's a gated community, yes. It's very very posh over here, very established. So, like the Thomases and the Druicks are close by. So.
Yep, right. There you go. So anyway, first of all, tell us about, your show. You've been doing it for a while. You do the fantasy football stuff. Talk a little bit about your show, and then if you would, talk to us about what's going on for tomorrow.
Of course, the show with Leo and Balky, we've actually, Alex, we've been on over 4 years now. In August was our four-year anniversary.
4 years as of August 6th. So, 4 years, man.
Wow.
We're going into our... Well, it'll be our five-year anniversary. We'll have to do something special next year.
Oh, boy.
But, what Balky and I love to do is take the show on the road and see the people and shake some hands out there. And, by golly, tomorrow we're gonna be over at Kits and File and all the things you said we're going to be discussing. But we're also going to be giving you a little send-off as you are – well, you're going to be kind of semi-retired, if you will, won't you, Mark?
I'm taking some time off, and I'll be back to work somewhere doing something. You may see me at that smiling face as you pull up and order your cup of coffee at McDonald's or Culver's or who knows. I'm giving up the outdoor career and moving on with life and doing some of the fun things. But I'm looking forward to it.
We're going to give you a send-off. Richard from Nemus Southside Market and his crew, though, I think brats, burgers, will be hot dogs will be on the grill. So it's going to be a festive atmosphere, to say the least.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to your friend from over at Appleton East. I think you said his, what was his name?
That's Ryan Marks. Yep, Ryan Marks.
Ryan Marks. Yep. I was going to say Ryan Marks, and I was like, I better not say it if I get it wrong. Mark will jump all over me.
No.
Ryan Mark, he'll join us, and we'll talk about where all the proceeds go tomorrow. And the show will be broadcasting live from 1 to 3, but then as you had mentioned, we're going to stick around and do the Appleton Trophy Fantasy Football Show too. So if any of our listeners out there are in the area, right across the street from Appleton East High School, next to the Real Shot, Kits and File, it's going to be a circus atmosphere. I mean – Balky and I are going to be there. So, I mean, the clowns will be there. That's for sure.
The clowns will be there, So we're looking forward to that in full makeup. But, the award-winning, fantasy football show. That's, you guys have really become you're kind of becoming iconic, if you will.
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't say two-time WBA award. Two-time award.
Well, good
winning
for you guys. Yeah, that's awesome.
That program has been on 20 plus years now.
Wow. Is that right?
And I've always touted it as award winning, and finally my remarks have come true. But we Alex Thomas and I and Balky, we behind the scenes we put in a lot of work. So I'm not going to say it's well-deserved, but for those guys anyway. But it's more of a longevity award, I think. And we just we're able to send it. We just have like one magical segment every single year, it seems like. And we send that clip into the WBA, and they seem to like it because they've given us two awards over the last 3 years. So it's been kind of cool. And the only reason it's not a three-peat, Alex, is because we didn't submit a year, right?
We did not submit in 2020. So, yeah, we technically every year that we've submitted, we've won. So it's been pretty cool the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Awesome. It's going to be a super fun day. We're going to have, it looks like the weather is going to cooperate. We're going to have a fun day. I mean, if not, I think you had told me we're going to be undercover in tents. And, well, people can go in and check out some of the fine things at Kits and File over at The Real Shot, sample some food from Richard from Nima Southside Market, and hang out with us. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, no, that sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to it. So it will be fun for all, and we're raising money for a good cause. And I really appreciate you guys, volunteering your time, not volunteering, but, taking your show on the road and bringing it over to, not too far from here and helping us raise some money. So thanks for doing that.
No problem. Glad to do it, Mark. And we're going to have a fun day tomorrow. So yeah. Look forward to seeing everyone out there. Leo and Bulky live from Kits and File with Mark Carlos Truick, as we always call you.
Carlos, yeah. I don't even think you call me by my real name anymore anyway, so you haven't for
years.
Well,
that all started with our good friend Sparks, Shane Sparks.
Shane Sparks, yep, I remember.
It always has kind of stuck ever since, so yeah. It brings back great memories, to say the least.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, listen, man, thanks so much. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and thanks again for taking the time to come on.
See you, Leo.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Later. All right, Leo Kuiper Jr., if you want to see what the guy really looks like. He's got a face for radio, but if you really want to see what he looks like, show up tomorrow and help us raise some money.
One and only Leo Kuiper Jr.
He is a one and only.
He's a one percenter, that's for sure.
He's a one percenter. Yeah, there you go. That's very complimentary. Well, yeah. you spend more time with him than most people, so I guess that's how that goes.
Great man. Good colleague to have, to say the least. And
yeah.
I'm sure you guys will have a great turnout tomorrow, too.
Yeah, if the weather's cooperating, and I think it will be, it should be good. Looking forward to it. All right, so with that being said, we'll get to tonight's guest. And tonight's guest is a co-worker of mine. He has become a good friend of mine over the last 3 years. We have a lot of fun together. We are both waterfowl junkies. We share a lot of stories. And Mike Williams is joining me here tonight. Mike, it's great to have you on the show finally. You had to squeak in here before I left. So
I know. Right?
I'm glad you could break away. I know this is a busy time of year for us, but thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Mike, I've gotten to know you pretty well over the years, but, for the listeners, obviously you're an outdoor guy. You live the outdoor life. You love to hunt. You love to fish. You're knowledgeable. I call you like a unicorn because you're good on the firearm field. You're good in the archery field. You're good on the fishing field. What was it about? How did you get started in the outdoors? Was there, a family thing? Was it a grandfather? Who got you to develop this passion?
I grew up in a hunting family. I mean, I deer hunted and stuff as a kid, and we fished all the time. And like growing up as a kid, I mean, you're playing baseball, Little League, and all that stuff. And I think it really hit home when you get done with Little League that summer and, like fifth grade or whatever it is, sixth grade, and getting ready for the next season. And, I love fishing in the summer. And my dad asked me, hey, do you want to keep playing ball or what? I'm like, yeah, I want to keep playing ball, but I want to fish all the time too. And, in the summer you can, obviously. So, that's what I kind of made up my mind, that I quit playing baseball in sixth grade and I spent my time fishing all the time. In the summers and stuff, heading up north to Phillips and Canada all the time, every year. So
and that was something that you and your dad did, spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, we did a lot of fishing together, growing up in Green Bay, fishing De Pere and the Bay and all that kind of stuff, chasing walleyes and muskies and stuff like that, and perch. And yeah, it was a good time. Deer hunted all the time, too. I mean, grew up deer hunting. I mean, probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I mean, back in the day, I mean, we lied about my age to get me into hunter safety a year early. I waited like 20 years. I went to the DNR. I'm like, hey, you guys got the wrong date of birth on my certificate here, you know?
I think the secret's safe, man.
Yeah, well, the warden might be listening tonight. I don't know. She might be, but.
Statute of limitations is over. On
yeah,
this,
you're, so yeah, I mean, you're good. Good. You're good. But, you know, it's great that, you know, you had that family bond.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of people that don't. You know, and that's why they have the Learn to Hunt programs and all this stuff available out there for people. But, you know, guys like you and I who grew up in that family, and I think that creates a really big bond between family as well, because it's something that you can, you know, do together, whether it's fishing, you know, well, deer hunting, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, I sat in a deer stand when I was like 8 years old.
And that's perfect. That's the way it should be.
I remember my dad shooting his big 8-pointer, and we're in this big giant popple tree, like 40 feet up in the stand, and he was like in a harness above the stand, so he basically shot kind of like over my head down at this deer, and I mean, I was sitting there, I mean, the whole tree was shaking, and it was me. I'm like, I'm looking at my legs, and I'm like, I'm all jumping, and I'm like, I didn't even shoot nothing. I'm all jacked up.
And that's the thing that's hard to explain to people, and I've had this conversation, I'm sure you have as well. You know, what is it? You know, why do you like to go sit in the cold and in the wind and, you know, shoot ducks and, you know, stand in cold water or go fishing when it, you know, it's hard to explain it to somebody, but it's all part of it. We talked about it today. It's like therapy.
It is.
You know, you bust away from life.
It's like a reset, you know, even at work now. I mean, I'm old, and I mean, I get a couple of days off, and I don't want to sit at home. You know, I get the boat out, I'm fishing. I don't care if I can catch anything. I'll just drive the boat around, check out different spots. I'm like, just, it's a complete reset from, I guess, real life. So, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, for me, it's like therapy. You know, you kind of leave all your stuff behind. And for me, going up to northern Wisconsin, Highway 64 is my, kind of like you leave all that crap behind and cross over that, and you get into that. And it's like everything just melts away, and now you can focus on, you know, if you're going to go on trout fishing or waterfowl hunting or grouse hunting or whatever it is, because you know what's at the end of the road there is fun.
Yeah, 100%. It's relaxing. Like you said, you get up north, and it's just the hustle and bustle isn't there. It's quiet. It's peaceful.
Yeah, no phones ringing.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I got no service. It's good. No one. My wife can't get a hold of me.
Hey, if anybody wants to chime in tonight, got a question or a comment, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. You can also reach out to me via email, and that is livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram as well. It's outdoorslivingthe. Excuse me. But, you know, this time of the year, I mean, obviously in the archery, you know, everything's going on. It's busy, but, you know, you love to fish, but is your true passion waterfowl hunting?
100%.
I mean, 100%. You and I have sat in the blind together, and we talk about it every time we work together.
I mean, we work together in the archery department. I don't think you even talk about archery hunting ever. It's all about waterfowl and chasing grouse or something like that. It's not even deer hunting. It's probably like 1% deer hunting we talk about.
I know, because we're working on everybody else's stuff, and we want to talk about stuff that we really, really get into. But was it? You know, obviously you like to bow hunt too.
Yeah.
But it was a no-brainer. Was it a no-brainer for you to pick waterfowl? Because you know how it is, that the good time to hunt both is right around the end of October, November. Birds are coming through, the deer are running around.
Yeah, I mean, when you're younger, you don't have any responsibilities. You do it all, you know? I mean, I squirrel hunted, grouse hunted, pheasant hunted, waterfowl. You did all that. And then you start getting older, you start getting more responsibilities. And for me personally, like, if I'm doing something, I want to do it. I want to be fully invested in it. And when you get older, you get all that stuff, and you're kind of splitting your time up between like 10 different things. It's just, it gets hard to do it like you want to do it. You know, I mean, you want to put all your heart into it, but you can't because you you got to go check cameras tomorrow, or you got to do this or that. So I got to a point in my life and I was like, man, I don't have time for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And waterfowl just drew me in. It's just, it's awesome. It's more personable when you're hunting with other guys. I don't have to sit in a tree stand by myself being quiet for 9 hours. You know what I mean?
Which sometimes advantageous.
Sometimes it's not bad, you know. No. But I mean, I like being able to stand in the blind out in the field, stand here talking like we're talking now. And then we're like, oh, dude, here comes the birds. Let's get in the, you know, then we start making noises and stuff and shooting stuff.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. And then waterfowl hunting is, there's just something about it. you know, especially here in Wisconsin. You're shooting, you know, you're deer hunting. That's great. You're hunting white-tailed deer.
Yeah.
You're duck hunting. You're shooting geese. You're shooting ducks. You're shooting mergansers.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And how many species we have in Wisconsin. But, you know, you never know. You know, you could be hunting divers. You can be hunting in a field. You got the opportunity. You want to paddle back in the marsh. Now, I know you don't like. You're more of a field guy.
Well, I grew up, with my dad. I mean, I grew up hunting El Dorado Marsh, and it was, you know, waders, canoe, soaking wet at the end of the day, and I don't have any socks on because they're all stuck at the bottom of my boot, and my feet are cold. And then I got older, and a buddy of mine, Eric Stanky, got me into field hunting, and, dude, I was straight hooked watching geese land at, you know, we're shooting them at 10, 15 feet.
Yeah.
You know, and you tell people that, even now, you get guys in the store talking about stuff, and They're amazed. They look at you like, I have five heads that I'm shooting a 28 gauge and killing geese. And when these guys are running 12 gauge, 3.5 inch triple B loads, I'm like, you could take planes down with that stuff. And you know,
and we're gonna talk about that because you got me hooked on it, and I finally bought one.
You finally pulled the trigger, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been really happy with it. I still got to get used to it a little bit more. Used to shooting a 12 gauge, but you know, there's something about, you know, hunting in the field and you know, the bird, you don't have to chase them. You
right.
know, you drop them in the water, they dive on you, and, yep. you know, in the weeds, and, you know, if you don't have a dog, you're at a distinct disadvantage, but, you know, you drop them in the field.
You just go pick them up, or the dog goes picks them up.
Yeah. And it's, you know, one of the things I enjoy the most, you know, you're watching the sun come up, you know, you got, you know, half an hour, you're laying out the decoys and, you know, having a cup of coffee before it all gets started. It's like this whole, you know, theatrical thing that goes on. That's like, it's hard really to explain to somebody until you actually take them. And I've done that with a couple of people. Yeah. It's like, I don't get it. Yeah. Right, well, come on, we'll go do that. We'll go turkey hunting. We'll do something.
Yep.
So now you can understand exactly what it is. And some of those mornings, I'll tell you, when you're waking up and it's like bright orange and pink, and there's a light mist on the water, and you know, you hear the birds whistling over you when it's still dark. It's like, oh, it's going to be a good one.
It's awesome. You hear that, the whistling wings. Yep.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. And hey, the leaves are starting to fall, and it is time to start cleaning up the yard. And, you know, you need to take a trip out and talk to my friends out at Evergreen Power in Little Chute. They have a great selection of Toro equipment to help you with all your yard cleanup. Evergreen Power has Toro walk-behind mowers and, of course, the zero-turn mower as well. Evergreen Power, they have a phenomenal money-back guarantee. If you're not happy with your purchase, they will buy it back or replace it. Financing is also available along with pickup and delivery. For the best sales and service in town, visit my friends Greg and Ryan at Evergreen Power, located on Highway N in Little Chute, right across from Simon's Cheese. Evergreen Power, your Fox City's Toro headquarters. You can count on them. Yeah, it's up north this last weekend, and the colors are really starting to change. Yeah, you can see, you know, some of them here are starting
here
to change. But up north, it's really starting to pick up a little bit. And they're saying that it's going to be a little bit later fall this year, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was in Door County on Saturday walleye fishing, and everything's still bright green up there. There was no color change at all in Door County.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we launched an Ephraim and running around up by Death's Door and Chambers and all that stuff, and everything was still bright green up there.
Wow.
So
that's crazy. Well, you know, it is, the thing of it is that it's like pretty for a couple of days, and then the wind and the rain come and knocks all down.
Yeah.
But that's what I wait for, because that's when the grouse hunting gets really good, because they have really nowhere to hide anymore.
Right, exactly. Clear some shooting lanes.
Yeah, clear some shooting lanes. But, you know, we kind of left talking about, you know, we're talking waterfowl hunting tonight and, you know, the field hunting. And I did a lot of that when I was younger, but it was more of the water stuff or whatever it was.
And I grew up. I grew up on the water.
And, you know,
all the time.
You pick what you like.
Yeah.
And I think the cool thing about, you know, hunting in fields is you can take a cart.
Yeah.
You know, or some of the landowners will let you drive out
and
put all your stuff out. And it's in particular around here, because there's geese everywhere.
They're everywhere.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's been a weird year though. I mean, don't know. It's just this time of year, you're kind of in that transition where they want to hit the fields, but then one day they don't, and then you drive by a road or a park, and they're sitting in a soccer field where they haven't been for 2 days because they've been sitting in your field that you hunted that morning and didn't see a single bird.
Yeah, it's...
It's frustrating.
It is. But, you know, we talked about this numerous times on the show and with the warden. Scouting is critical.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the mileage on my vehicles, it's from mid-August to the end of the season, it's probably what I put on all year long. In like 3 months, I'll do what I do in 9 months, just driving around.
And that's all you really have to do, find out where they're feeding.
Follow them off the roost, find a field, knock on the door, get permission. If you can't, I try and get permission on a field next to it, try and run traffic on them or something. If not, well, off to the next group of birds that, you know, I passed up to try and chase these ones down.
Yeah, and that's, it's like that with anything. And, you know, think, what do you need to go out and scout waterfowl for? But, we used to have to do that too because water conditions change.
Yeah.
You know, and that will impact where the birds go.
Yeah.
You know, if you got dry conditions, they're going to be a little bit more concentrated in certain areas, maybe small creeks, rivers, beaver ponds, stuff like that. But, you know, it seems this last weekend in northern Wisconsin that the water levels are a little bit low.
Yeah, I noticed the bay is down. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was like at record highs, and now it's like 3 feet lower than it was just a couple of years ago. Like, where did all that water go?
Yeah, it's like, where does it go? Does it just evaporate into thin air? But, you know, it taking the time to go out and scout, find out where the birds are, you know, go out at night, watch where they're flying in and you know, doing your homework on that can definitely
100%.
Make a big deal.
That's 100% part of it. I mean, shooting them is just the bonus. For me, it's a chase. I mean, I love chasing them down, running them down, driving down these backcountry roads, doing like 90 miles an hour, hoping a deer doesn't jump out while I'm chasing some geese that are... I saw him laying in a field, you know, two woodlots over, you know. I'm trying to catch up to him or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's and there's so much area around here. And have you noticed, are you doing some scouting now?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a huge last week or so, a huge influx of geese came in. You got your migrators that came down and stuff. So they'll be around for a few weeks. And then now they'll be back to shooting locals by probably end of October, early November.
And then you get another... surge of
birds. Another surge of birds, usually like that right around Halloweenish time, and you know, within a few days of Halloween you just see a good push of ducks and geese down. So,
and that, you know, always watching the weather,
always.
Yeah,
but at the same time, it's, I mean, I keep a log and it's pretty consistent from year to year. Everyone wants to say they're waiting for a big north wind and stuff, but I mean, they're not gonna set up north forever. They're more calendar birds than weather birds. You know, don't let anybody fool you. You know, you got to have a north wind for birds to come down. I mean, I've hunted end of October with south winds for 5 days and huge push of birds come in. I mean, they have to leave. They're not going to stay there.
Yeah, right. They're gonna have to get out,
yeah.
You know, to find food and whatever. But it seems like when you get one of those big storms in late October, early November.
Yeah, you'll see a good push.
You'll right see a big push. Yeah. Yep. And we always used to do that back in the day because – you know, we didn't have all the ability to...
The technology.
Well, yeah.
You didn't have it.
No, you didn't have any of that stuff. And it's like you got to base it on the storm front coming through, and you're going to hope that these birds are going to push in. Most of the time they did.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's the only reason that you could get out there and hunt them. But it's waterfowl hunting is something that's... I don't know. It's been in my blood for so many years, and it's fun to like you said, chase them around.
It is.
Figure out where they are. Yeah. I really like to jump shoot.
Yeah.
Doing that up in northern Wisconsin. I'd rather do it with somebody because you got one guy paddling and one guy shooting. Because if you're by yourself, you got to set the paddle down. Most of the time, the paddle drops in the water.
Oh, yeah. I've lost a few paddles. I've had my dad yell at me a few times.
Yeah.
Losing paddles, especially, you know, in the dark paddling out or something. We're doing circles in a marsh in the dark trying to find a paddle.
Yep. That's why I always carry at least two or three.
Yeah, we always had three in a boat. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you're going to drop one. But, you know, it's kind of like grouse hunting. You got to get up and get on them because wood ducks or teal will jump up they're out.
It's crazy jump shooting birds. You think you have the perfect blind set up and you're 70 yards away, and Next you know, they're gone. Like, yeah. Like, what did they see? I was laying down. Now they see me. I don't understand it. They got some weird sixth sense or something. They knew I was coming.
You know, and then I like it not only for the duck hunting aspect of it, but, you know, you're it's so quiet.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear any cars. You don't hear anything. And you're way back. And some of these spots that I start out in are probably 4 miles off the main road. And that when that meanders, I don't know how many miles it is. Yeah, I should actually track it on my Onyx.
You should, see how far you're going back there.
It's probably a lot farther than I thought
than
it would
be. Yeah.
But you know that's in shooting those types of birds like that, it's the action is really fast because you just don't. You come around the corner, and there's also I've developed some methodology to it. You know, you got to kind of get the canoe around the corner like that, and kind of get yourself positioned so you can get a shot.
Yes.
You know, I learned that the hard way. You come in hard on the corner, and all of a sudden the birds take off. You can't even get the gun up.
Yeah, you still got the paddle in your hand, looking around, going, where'd it go? What's going on?
Exactly. And let's talk a little bit about, you know, guns. Obviously, you mentioned you like to shoot a 28 gauge, and I was there visualizing you shooting, you know, Canadas with a 28 gauge and dropping them like flies. And you find, hey, these sub gauges are the way to go. You find the right ammo for them, and they're lightweight. They're low like recoil. No recoil
especially at 28 gauge. It's like shooting a BB gun. It's like I told you before you bought yours. I said, I mean, the last four hunts of my first year of my 28 gauge, I didn't miss. I mean, I was pulling triples out like nothing. It's like the gun doesn't jump. It's easy to stay on target, no recoil, and it's just fun.
It really is. And I got to shoot mine for the first time, you know, at an actual bird. I kind of bought it for grouse hunting, but I really like it for waterfowl hunting.
You're going to like it for waterfowl, especially when you get a big wad of birds coming in. You get a flock of like 15 birds coming in, and you're going, after you start shooting a little bit, you're going to be like, if I don't triple, something's wrong with me. Because if those birds land where they're going to want to land, where I think they should, if I can't pull a triple, something's literally wrong with me. It's, like you said, there's no recoil to it. No muzzle jump or nothing. It stays there, stays out in front of you, like really right where you're pointing. Like, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, you know, because you can't shoot three if you don't kill the first one.
Yeah, well, that's it. Pick the first one and then go from there.
Pick the first one and then go. I mean, it's exciting shooting them with the 28 gauge. It's a lot of fun. Plus, I don't worry about taking a beating from 12 gauge.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're waterfowl hunting and you know, the birds are there, you're doing a lot of shooting.
Yeah.
You know, they can beat you up. I shot an 1187 for years, and that beat the crap out of me. And then I bought a Browning Maxis, and that helped.
Yeah.
You know, that took a lot of that recoil away. But then, you know, finally with that Benelli, it's like, oh, my goodness, what did I wait so long for? But you don't see a lot of them.
No, you don't. And they're making a comeback. I mean, the sub-gauge has been around forever. I mean, I went from the 12-gauge to a 16-gauge, shot 20 for a while, and then the 28-gauge came out, and I was like, yeah, I need to get me one of them. And then I shot it, and I was like, I need to get me another one. I need to buy another one, you know? I don't know what I need them for, but I got them.
Well, and that's just it. You know, I mean, if you always have to have a backup.
Always.
You know, I mean, something's going to go wrong. I mean, I dropped mine in the water already. First day.
First day. Yeah, brand new gun. First.
Oh, bloop. Yeah. There it goes. Oh, well, okay. You know, tipped it upside down, got all the water out of it. And
it's a Benelli, so it's going to keep running.
Yeah, just keep shooting. I got it back, and and my wife said, are you going to clean your gun right here on the table? I'm like, yep, I dropped it in the water.
Already? How much did you spend on that gun?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's kind of like now it's been christened.
Exactly.
You know, there hasn't been a gun I've owned that hasn't been dropped, especially a waterfowl gun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you get a jumpy dog that sees a cripple run, you're going for a swing.
Oh, I've done it chasing cripples in the marsh, too. You know, my dog's out running after other birds. I got one going the other direction, so I'm chasing it. And you're walking through the marsh and all that loon crap at the bottom of the marsh. And somehow there's always a stump down there or something.
Something to trip on.
Always. I've gone face first a number of times. And you got that gun out in front and just down it goes. And I swish it around the water, go back to the canoe and start shooting some more.
and that's it. If you're a duck hunter, stuff's getting wet.
Yeah.
You know, from the dog, from you, waders, you know, birds. Yeah. You just be prepared to leaky canoes, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, even field hunting, too. It's amazing how much grit can get in your gun sitting in your layout blind.
Yeah, you're laying in a dirt field.
Yeah, you get done with the hunt at the end of the day, you get a half a corn stalk and a pound of corn in your gun somehow, and I don't even know where that came from. I was hunting a hayfield.
Right. And, you know, we talk about layout blinds. You know, I mean, there's just something about that style of hunting. I mean, you're laying like you're laying in a coffin.
Yeah.
And these birds are like right on top of you.
Yeah, they have no idea you're there. I mean, the biggest part of layout blind hunting is being concealed. So, I mean, I spend more time grassing up my blinds than putting out decoys because, I mean, that's if you can't hide, you're not going to shoot anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we get a group of guys out hunting, and I mean, there'll be like one or two guys putting decoys out, and there'll be five guys, six guys grassing up blinds because if you're not hidden, you're not going to shoot birds. They're going to pick you out.
Yeah, well, they got the best view.
Yeah, they're coming right down on top of you, you know, or they're circling you multiple times like the stupid mallards like to do, you know?
Mallards, yeah. They look like they're coming and then just around and around.
And around.
That happened to me this last weekend. They had five of them.
Then you tell the guy you're hunting with, hey, well, let him make one more pass, and then he just jumps up and starts shooting for some reason. I was waiting
how long it was going to be before you brought that up. Here's the story. You know, Mike invites me to go on this hunt with him, and he's in charge. He's calling. He's making the shot calls. And a couple of mallards came in, and I jumped the gun.
Yeah, you did. No one was expecting it. That's for sure. I think the worst part about it was he didn't even kill anything. You know?
No, I missed them both.
I mean, if you're going to jump the gun, at least kill something. You know? Yeah.
You know, it happens. I got a little excited.
You did.
I'm like, they're coming. But that first one, that first mallard that came in, came in, it's like, he goes, take it. Boom.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool.
That was, yeah.
That was a fun day.
We loaded up.
I
wasn't even expecting any mallards that day. I was expecting all geese. You know, and when we got set up, I didn't know exactly what direction they were coming from.
Yeah.
And those first couple flocks didn't work like we wanted to, so we moved part of the spread, and then it was game on after that. And then those ducks came late that morning, too. They didn't show up till like 8:30.
Yeah, it was later.
And they just kept coming and kept coming. We just kept shooting them.
Yeah, and it was snow on the ground.
It was snowing.
A little chilly.
Yeah, it was a little chilly that morning. The day before was worse. I drove by that field the day before on the way to work, and it was like 4 degrees and snowing and like 20 mile an hour winds. I drive by and there's like 200 geese in this field already. They're sleeping. I was not expecting them to come out that afternoon until like 3 o'clock. When it gets cold like that, those geese are lazy. You know, they'll come out once a day in the afternoon and that's it. And I was like super surprised. I mean, I almost put my truck in the ditch and had to turn around knocking the farmer's door.
Yeah, fine. And I remember we're walking out and we got headlamps on. I'm like, you can't even see any untouched snow. There's goose prints everywhere.
They were everywhere. That morning we hunted, what did we see? Probably 500-600 geese easily.
There was a couple big flocks. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That was quite a, and those are one of those days that you dream of, you know. It's the snow on the ground and it's different.
It is.
You know, when you're sitting in the snow and your blinds are all covered up, but God, that was fun.
It was a good day.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back. Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show. We're here on The Score. Mike was just telling us a story.
That was a good story about shooting vans.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen your lanyard. How many have on there? You have a couple lanyards full of them, don't you?
I got like 55 bands, I think, 57 bands, something like that.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. A lot of geese, a handful of ducks, mostly geese. So a lot of local birds, some from Canada, Minnesota, stuff like that. But I mean, they do a lot of banding in the valley here, chasing those geese around. So
that's kind of cool because that's, you know, when you go onto the website and find out where they were banded.
Numbers in, find out where it was banded, what year, how old it was, when it was banded. I mean, I got a collar that I shot a bunch of years back off a goose. I was 19 years old.
It's crazy.
Which is pretty crazy. Think how many spreads that bird has seen in its lifetime.
19 years. You wouldn't expect a game bird to live that long.
Yeah. I mean, I got friends that got snow geese bands that are 22, 23, 24 years old.
Yeah. It's amazing that those birds live that long, but think about
the season length on them. I mean, they're only not getting hunted like 4 months out of the year.
I know.
The spring hunt starts in February, runs through like, I don't know, like mid April or something like that. And then you got the fall season. And then, I mean, they're going from the tundra all the way down to Texas, just getting hammered on. And you got birds that are 23, 24 years old.
Yeah, and they've seen it all.
Yeah.
And then they mean that. I mean, let me ask you this. Are a lot of those birds that people shoot juveniles?
I'll say of my bands, it's probably 50-50.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, when they do the banding, obviously they're banding the juveniles at that time too, but they're banding adults that, you know, didn't have bands from the year before and stuff. There's some recaptures, sure, obviously, but I mean, there's still plenty of adults that get banded.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's I went to a outfitter down in Illinois, and he had some bands too, and he goes, "Yeah, this one was like over 20 years old."
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you said, think about a wild bird just living that long. It just,
and it does. You know, when you think, when they get hunted from, like you said, from Canada to Texas or the Arctic tundra to, yeah, Texas, I mean, that's a lot of that's like running a very huge gauntlet.
That's a huge gauntlet to be running. Yeah, and then turn around and go back. You know, on their migration north, and then, yeah, just running back into it again. You know,
crazy. But you know, we were talking about, you know, shotguns, and let's talk a little bit about ammo. I know you're big on some of that heavier shot. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, especially in the sub gauges. I like shooting that Boss ammo. It's a copper plated bismuth, so it's round. It's not like some of these other manufacturers making bismuth that they're just pressing it. It's all misshapen and stuff. You know, they're charging you $75 a box for, I don't know, it looks like something you pull out of your sandbox. You know what I mean? And this Boss ammo out of Minnesota or Michigan, they've been around for a handful of years now, and it's, the stuff is awesome. I mean, it hits hard. It's harder than steel shot, but it's not as heavy as lead shot, you know?
Okay.
Or tungsten. But it's kind of in the middle between steel and lead shot. So it hits like lead, and it's great out of your sub gauges. I mean, your pellet count's obviously way lower than a 12 gauge.
Yep.
You know, but it allows you to run smaller pellet size to get a solid, dense pattern, you know, at your target yardages, you know, in, sure, 30, 40 yards.
Now, with these sub gauges, Mike, are you switching up your chokes? What are you running for chokes when you're hunting birds?
Usually, I mean, I run a lot of Pattern Master on my 12 gauge and my 20 gauge. My 28 gauge, I got Carlson's Cremator. I got a buddy who runs a Jebs out of his as well. The guy Jebs is pretty cool. He sent my buddy like 6 choke tubes and shoot whatever you shoot them all, see what you like, and let me know which one, and let me know how it works for you. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's cool. You get to play around with the ammo a little bit and pattern and see what works best for that load out of that gun.
And that's what's critical.
You know,
take the time to do that.
It's,
you know,
amazing how many guys don't.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I did was take that gun out and pattern it.
Yeah,
see how it shot with it improved and modified
or a full or whatever. Yeah.
Yep. And I was shooting that Winchester steel out of it, and that patterned actually pretty well.
Did it?
But I'm anxious to try the Boss ammo. I'm probably gonna take a box of that when the birds start getting more plentiful on Winnebago.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited because the outfitter that I'm going to in Massachusetts for sea ducks, and my taxidermist said, that's what you want to,
yes,
shoot,
exactly,
because you're not blowing the crap out of these,
yeah,
birds.
Yeah, you're not hitting with giant pellets and busting. I mean, the biggest thing with taxidermy is broken wings and stuff.
Exactly.
You know, and you got this bismuth. It's a, like I said, it's a heavier pellet, but you get away with smaller pellets.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you get a fuller pattern, and it's devastating. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, and you turned me on to it, and I'm anxious to try it. And it's not something that you can find in a retail store. You have to go online.
Yeah, they're direct only. I talked to them a couple of years ago about getting them in the store, but, you know, then COVID hit and then the supply chain issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll reach back out to them again probably in the next year or so, see if we can get some in the store, at least a little bit of in the store. I mean, I talk it up all the time at the store. And
it'd be nice to have it.
I show guys the website, and I'm not selling my own ammo at the store. I'm telling these guys to go online and buy it from someone else.
And you know, when you order from them, I mean, I ordered my stuff, and I had it in like 2 days.
Yeah, I ordered some stuff one time. I think it was like a Wednesday morning or Tuesday night, something like that. And I went to a buddy's house for a Packer game. They played on Thursday. My wife called me. She goes, you got a box from Boss Ammo on your porch already. I'm like, dude, that was like 47 hours ago. Yeah, the worst part about it was, as I get home and open the box, and it was the wrong ammo. I ordered 20 gauge and they sent me 16 gauge.
So, oh boy.
So I called the girl the next morning and she's like, I don't know how that happened. She's like, just go ahead and keep it because it costs us too much to ship it back.
So did you go buy a 16 gauge?
I had one. I wanted it for the 20 gauge specifically. But then, like I said, then they had the 28 gauge, and the first time I shot that, I was hunting this field, loaded with mallards right off Lake Winnebago, and this first mallard came in, and I pulled it. It was hanging over the top of the lucky duck, and I pulled the trigger, and it kind of sounded like a dud, like, and the BBs pretty much, like, fell out of the barrel. I'm in a cornfield, and I'm like, I got a 28 gauge. What am I going to jam down this barrel to get the wad out of it, you know?
Right.
So there I am in the dark, taking the gun apart, and I put the barrel in my mouth, and I blew the wad. I blew it, the wad just came out nice and easy. I just blew it back towards the receiver. It popped out, and I ended up shooting my mallards that morning, and I sent him an email, and within like a half an hour, I had three people from Boss Ammo call me, ask me what happened.
Really?
I sent them pictures of because I had the hull and everything, and apparently they had some mishap with one of the machines or something that's spitting out some bad loads, and they knew exactly just by looking at the hull which lot of ammo it was.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, so, what does that tell you about the company?
The customer service is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you get online on social media, and there's literally zero bad reviews as far as customer service goes with those guys.
Yeah.
It's a small group of guys, you know, like 6-7 guys is all it is, just pumping out this ammo, just running down components to make it and stuff. And the Facebook page I have is just lit up. Guys are, I mean, they keep everybody informed as of what they're making too, which is cool. So you can plan ahead. I mean, obviously you can get on a waiting list, but if you're patient and you follow the social media with them, I mean, they give you a schedule. Hey, next week on Monday, we're pumping this out. Tuesday, we're pumping that out. So then, I mean, if it's something that's been out of stock for a while, you better be calling them right away in the morning when they open up, because in like 6 minutes, it's going to be gone. It's amazing. I mean, the guys love the stuff.
Yeah, it's. I'm anxious to use it. So
I mean, it's not going to make you a better shooter. I mean, if you suck at shooting already,
yeah,
it's not some golden bullet. It's not going to make you better.
No, you know? But it's going to if you pattern it correctly and you know how to shoot, it's just going to make your kill ratio a little bit better.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I'm not chasing cripples around.
Yep.
You know, if I do my job, I'm not chasing any cripples around, which is awesome about it.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I mean, I'll pay the extra money because I'm going to shoot less anyway.
Well, yeah, precisely.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. And they come in, they're not your normal 25 count boxes either.
No, a case is 200, and then the boxes, I mean, they'll send you a box that fits 25. But they sell them as boxes of 20,
mm-hmm.
and a case is 200. And it shows up in a box, and all the ammo's in a Ziploc bag. And there's like two little boxes in there folded up. But then they send you this cool money bag, a waxed canvas bag that you can put your ammo in, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
Because you know how it is out in the marsh. I mean, your stuff's getting wet all the time. How many cardboard boxes of ammo boxes? I mean, it lasts a half a day, and they're gone. And now you got a bag of ammo you started that you could have got from these guys already.
Yeah, you know, as soon as that bottom of that box gets in, you go to pull it out of the bag, they all fall off. So just don't even bother.
The bottom of your wet bag, the 2 inches of water in the bottom of your boat, yeah. Yeah. Been there, done that many a times.
Exactly. Let's talk about decoys a little bit. You know, obviously, you know, when we went out that day, you just had black and whites.
That's
just
all
corrugated.
I just corrugated election signs that I cut up in silhouettes and just painted black and white. I mean, it's pretty simple. My decoy arsenal has pretty much come full circle since I started. I mean, hunting with my dad, we had big, giant wood paneling silhouettes that we put in the marsh that were like 5 feet heat. They were gigantic.
Yeah.
It's all about visibility.
Right.
You know, and then you went to the shells, and then you went full bodies, and then you went, you know, higher grade full bodies, and then you get ridiculously high grade full bodies, and then I went to silhouettes, and then I was like, well, I'm gonna run black and whites. I mean, it's what I'd ran when I was a kid. Well, why wouldn't it work?
Yeah,
they're lighter weight. I mean, I could put, I don't know, probably 100 dozen silhouettes in my truck if I wanted to.
Sure.
I don't even have a cap on it. It's got a hard top,
yep.
Tonneau cover.
Yeah.
You know, I tell guys, I said, I got like 20 dozen decoys in my truck. They look at me like I got five heads. I said, no, I just run black and whites.
And you just, you know, we're using silhouettes and full bodies, and it makes a big difference how you set them up.
Yeah. Silhouettes, I mean, obviously, they're two-dimensional. They're not three-dimensional like a full body. But at the same time, they create the illusion of movement just because how you're putting them in the ground, the angles. And those birds are coming from a certain angle from one side or the other. You know, they see one decoy, they don't see that decoy. Now they see another one, they don't see one. So, like I said, it creates the illusion of movement.
Yep.
I think the only time a silhouette really gets lost is if he's like 500 yards straight up from you, straight over the top when he's looking down. You know, then he's looking at the top of those decoys. Then you obviously really can't, unless you have a really wide spread.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they're still always going to be visible.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm hunting ducks and geese. They're not coming straight down like snow geese are.
No, you know, they're not.
They're coming.
They're across, circling.
They're circling or coming across the field, you know, at 30 yards, you know, 20 yards up.
Crazy. Yeah, it's like, I don't know how many we put out that day, but it was, I think we had to actually punch holes in the ground to get them in.
Oh, yeah. Because
the ground was frozen.
The ground was frozen. Tool. Yeah, I got it. Actually, my brother custom made that for me so I can get those smaller stakes in the ground.
Yeah, you just put it and then step on it, punch the hole, and push it in. Out you go.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's genius. Awesome.
Genius. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Mike Williams is my guest. He's my co-worker and has become a friend of mine over the last several years. And Mike and I are bona fide white-tailed junkies, but...
Waterfowl junkies.
You know, I mean, I used to love...
Do you guys go out together at all or not really?
We've hunted together once.
One time, that's it. Yeah. Just, I mean, working together. If I'm not there, he's going to be there.
Do you normally, when you go waterfowl hunting, you're normally by yourself, right?
I am a lot, but Mike's got some buddies that he hunts with.
I got some friends I hunt with and stuff like that. A lot of times, though, I mean, I just moved back to Green Bay from the Fond du Lac area, so now I'm getting back into some of the guys I hunted with, you know, 20 years ago up here, so.
That's the fun part about it, because you can set up a field, and you can have 5-6 guys out there.
That's cool.
And it does make it fun. I mean, when we went, there were 3 of us.
Yep.
And we had a good old time. I mean, you can shoot the breeze, and all of a sudden, Mike will go, okay, birds are coming. You hear them. And Mike is a phenomenal caller. I mean, he can blow a goose call like no one I have ever heard before. And talk a little bit about Mike before we wrap it up. That, you know, you can buy your $20 goose calls, but there's some calls out there that, you know, are really real. Those acrylics and some of those high end calls that really make a difference.
Oh, they do 100%. I mean, just from the ease of use, you're not buying some mass produced call that some guy in a basement's pumping out, you know, 100,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, giant factory or something like that. I mean, some of the brands that we carry at the store and that I use myself, just, you know, a guy at home making them, you know, stamping out reeds, you know, pouring guts, you know, stuff like that.
Sure.
Sending out designs to get CNC, machined out and stuff. And then they're all hand-tuned. I mean, they send them to me. I ain't got to do nothing with them. They sound good right out of the box. Which is awesome. So.
Yeah. And when you talk about tuning, what do you mean? Moving the reeds around and getting
it just
right? Yeah,
on a goose call, you got your gut system. So there's like a trough that your reed sits on top of. And it makes that goose sound, that higher pitch when it pops down. So if it's not tuned right, if it catches, it's not going to make that sound. It's going to sound, I don't know, you're stepping on a dog or something. It's just awful. It's the worst sound ever. And it happens. Sometimes, you know, those guts slip in there or something, or you're moving around. You take it apart to clean it because, you know, you got a half a wad of chew in it or something, and you take it apart and you put it back together and you hit it, part of it with your thumb, and those geese come in and you go to blow the call and it sounds like a party horn. You're like, oh boy, grab the other one hanging on my lanyard. I can't use that one right now, you know.
And it's in Canada geese, everybody thinks they honk, but they make a lot of different noises.
They make a lot of different noises. And it's, I mean, more guys kill geese by not using the call. And when I say not using the call, I mean overcalling.
Okay.
I mean, you say I'm that great. I'm not that good a caller, but I know what to say, when to say, and how to say it.
Well, that's a good caller.
You know what I mean? So I think it's more about reading the birds and knowing what to say, when to say it. That's the biggest thing.
Well, it's like, you know, there's certain calls that are going to be, you know, comforting to them. And, you know, kind of like when you're you know, calling mallards.
Yeah.
There's certain calls, feeding chuckles and hail calls and... There's a time and a place to use all this stuff.
Use all those different sounds, 100%, yeah. And it's just practice. I mean, I had a girl in the store last weekend, and she wanted a goose call, and she wanted to spend, you know, $150 on it. She didn't care. She wanted to blow the call, and she sat in the store with me for probably half an hour. And then it's about hand position and tongue position in the mouth and how you're presenting air to the call. I mean, you're never puffing your cheeks out. It's coming from your diaphragm. You're pushing air versus blowing air.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell people that, they look at you like, what are you talking about? And then they start blowing the call, and all of a sudden they get that one, like, solid, crisp honk, and their eyes light up. You know, they put the call down, they look at you, and I go, yes, that's what you need to do, and I'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 20 minutes later before she does it again.
And that just practice.
It's just practice. I tell people that are newer to the game, and I said, just go to a park and just listen to birds. Listen to sounds you're making. You know, and like when you're hunting a field, you got decoys in it, and birds are coming in, and those birds on the ground are going to make certain sounds so those birds in the air coming in. So I say, go to a park and watch birds sitting on the ground. Don't really remember what those birds are saying until other birds are approaching. And that's when you'll see the intensity of their noises and their calls amplified, and they get more intense when those other birds are coming in. And that's what you kind of, you got to kind of mimic that.
Yeah.
And ducks are different. Ducks, I mean, they don't, you hear them on the ground and they don't really do much. You know, they're running around eating, you know,
busy.
Yeah. You know, once in a while you hear that hen over, you know, in the corner squawking, but in the air, you rarely hear them squawking in the air, but for some reason they want you calling. It's, ducks and geese are two different ball games when it comes to calling. For some reason, it's just different.
Yeah, and sometimes
it's hard to explain, but
sometimes you just want to get their attention.
Yeah,
you know, they're out of ways, and
just get them to turn and give me a look, and then I'll do the rest. I just need them, like you said, just get their attention, get them to come my direction, and then I'll do what I have to do.
That's the name of the game.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, listen, Mike, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great having me on the show finally.
Yeah, absolutely.
All these years and. You're leaving in 2 days, and you finally get me on the show.
Well, I was compelled. Plus, you know, the cool thing is hopefully we'll get to do more hunting together.
Oh, 100%.
You know, we're not covering for one another, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. And we talked about getting you up to my cottage, and we'll hunt some up north ducks and do some grouse hunting as well. So
I can't wait. It's gonna be a great time.
Awesome. All right. Well, listen, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to tune us in tonight. It's very much appreciated. Remember, if you have the opportunity to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, take advantage of it. It will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.